My man Chris is in the house.
Hey, Amy, how are you?
Welcome. It's good to see you.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. What you got for us?
Well, so this is a big one. This is 50 years ago this month, in September 26, 1969, the Beatles released Abbey Road, which, even though that wasn't their last album to be released, it was actually their last album to be recorded. When Let It Be was released in 1970, that was actually material that was recorded during the White Album sessions and after the White Album sessions. But, you know, just going into this album, right? Actually, if you go back to 1968, I mean, the Beatles before the White Album were kind of the biggest band in the world, and they had a lot of stress, you know, going into the White Album. They almost broke up during the recording of the White Album. Not long after that, they decided they wanted to kind of get back to their roots. And they got together and started working on songwriting and putting together some material that they wanted to put on an album called Get Back. And they were actually filming the rehearsals and stuff. And as you can imagine, that's a pretty personal thing. And the band members actually got in even more fights than they did during recording of the White Album. And so they kind of all scrapped this. They got into so much fighting that George Martin, their longtime producer, kind of said, I'm done with you guys. And then they kind of all left it hanging, and nobody knew what was going to happen. And a few weeks after this all happened, Paul McCartney decided he still wanted to do another album. And he talked to George Martin, and him and George Martin kind of decided that if they did it like they had done in the past, like pre Sgt. Pepper's, where George Martin kind of had a lot of say in putting the album together, and he wanted everybody to hang their egos at the door and come in. He said particularly John Lennon's ego. And so they went back into the studio. They kind of all decided to work on it like they used to, and George Martin had a lot more control. The funny thing is that, I mean, George Martin, he is oftentimes referred as the fifth Beatle. He produced every album except Let It Be, which actually was produced by Phil Spector. He's oftentimes been called like the fifth Beatle. I think I just said that. But anyway, I'm looking at my notes. He was the kind of genius in a lot of aspects, particularly the later Beatles records, where so much interesting stuff was done in the studio. Kind of a cool thing I found out on this is that the engineer for Let It Be was Alan Parsons. And not long after he engineered this album, then he went on to engineer Dark Side of the Moon, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah. So the recording happened mostly at EMI Studios, but also Olympic and Trident Studios. And those were three pretty legendary studios in London. Pretty much a who's who of bands in the US and the UK in the 1960s recorded there. At the time, Abbey Road Studios was not called Abbey Road Studios. It was EMI, and not until 1970 did they rename the studios in honor of the Beatles, who recorded there from 1962 to 70 off and on different projects. This was actually the second album that they recorded on an 8-track machine or a sound desk. Everything before that was 4-track. So 8-track recording was pretty new at the time, and this was only the second album that was done on this. So like in the late 60s, there were only a handful of albums that were recorded on 8-track, because as you can imagine, the Beatles were the biggest band in the world at the time, and the fact that they only were able to record two albums on this, I mean, it really didn't start, 8-track machines didn't really start being used by a lot of artists until, you know, 1970. Another cool thing about this is this was one of the first prominent albums that used a Moog synthesizer, and Moog synthesizers in the late 60s don't look like synthesizers now that are keyboards and dials and stuff. They look like old operator switchboards, much like the one out here in the lobby
yeah,
of Hotel Congress. Uh-huh. And so it's, if you haven't, you should Google it and look at what these old Moog synthesizers look like. I mean, they had different chords that you would, they're kind of crazy. But they didn't just use it to put any sort of vibes. There was two or three songs on the album that there were actually melodic parts that were used, that they used a Moog. So anyway, another cool thing about this is at the time, I mean, both Lennon and McCartney had been kind of, there's a rift dividing between them for a while and what they wanted to do. And at the time, Lennon kind of, he wanted to have a song much more like Rubber Soul or Revolver, that were a lot of distinct, separate songs that could stand on their own. and McCartney wanted an album that was more like Sgt. Pepper's, which was a lot of different little vignettes that kind of revolved around a similar melody that all grated into one another. And because of that, they kind of came to an agreement that one side would be done John Lennon style, and the other would be done Paul McCartney style. So the first side of Abbey Road is basically Lennon's side, and the second side of Abbey Road is McCartney's side. Although they all four of the Beatles actually had songwriting credit on this album. McCartney and Lennon still had the primary credits, but Harrison had a couple of his two of the best Beatles songs, in my opinion, were written by Harrison on this. And then even Ringo Starr had Octopus's Garden on this album too.
But that makes a lot of sense, and really I think explains the two styles of Lennon and McCartney just on their own solo careers too, like how they write songs with one sort of melody streaming through, and then Lennon with having like bold, individualistic songs.
And if you go back and you look at the Beatles, you can tell, especially, I mean, their first few albums were very much driven by the label and Martin, and they were very pop-centric kind of albums. But then starting with like Rubber Soul and Revolver, that was when John Lennon kind of had the main creative control of the band. And then with Sgt. Pepper's, then you start seeing McCartney getting a lot of control. And then this album was kind of the first time that Harrison really kind of stepped up, and two of the best songs in the album are songs that he wrote.
I still can't even believe what a gift the world had with all of them being in the same band.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's kind of amazing.
What a gift.
Yeah, and that they were put together when they were still teenagers.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. So there was still all this tension was going on, and there was so much tension is that just 6 days prior to the release of Abbey Road, John Lennon announced to the rest of the Beatles that he was leaving the group. Now, it didn't become kind of public until May of 1970 when McCartney decided he was going to leave the group too. So because of that, there was no promotion really at all, at least from the Beatles standpoint. They didn't go, they didn't go on any TV shows. There was no big tour. They did nothing really to promote this album. Nonetheless, this album was one of their best-selling releases. It sold 4 million copies in the first 2 months of its release.
Yeah, they probably did not need much promotion at that point.
Yeah, at that point they didn't. It debuted at number one in the UK album chart, remained there for 11 weeks. It spent 12 weeks at number one spot on the Billboard Top 200 chart in the U.S. It ended up being the best-selling LP for the Beatles in both the UK and the U.S. It sold 12 million copies in the U.S. alone, and over time, it's now sold like 30 million copies. It's one of the best-selling albums of all time, it's pretty good record if you haven't listened to
pretty
it.
Pretty good.
But, and what's funny about that is initially the critical response was kind of mixed. There were some people that thought it was genius like most people do now, but some people thought it was kind of contrived and a little bit inauthentic and gimmicky. At the time, I think what happened is like what everybody else, that when somebody puts something out as awesome as the White Album and something else comes out at first, it's hard to accept that it's as good in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But, over time now it's considered to be one of the best albums of all time. It's virtually on every, best album that any magazine or critics list has ever gone out, including Rolling Stone, who put it at number 12 on their 500 greatest albums of all time. And in the top 15 greatest albums of all time, according to Rolling Stones, the Beatles have four of them, which is pretty cool.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And in 2009, the Reader's Poll put that this was the Reader's Poll said that this was their favorite album.
You know, the thing that I've noticed about Beatles songs, this album and any album in particular, you can remember all the lyrics to any song. Like, if you play a Beatles song, people are automatically going to sing along with you because they just know it's like ingrained in all of us, Beatles lyrics.
It's true. Yeah. It's almost genetic at this point.
Yes.
Yes, it's true. But, and then just a couple more things because I know I'm talking a little bit too much. But the album cover, which is probably one of the most iconic album covers in the history of rock and roll, was John Kosh's idea, who was their kind of the Beatles artistic director at the time, and it was just the four of them walking across the crosswalk outside Abbey Road Studios. And the funny thing is, I found there's actually a webcam that was put up there in 2011, so you can go at any time and see who's walking across the crosswalk at Abbey Road. And so now, over the last few days, I keep watching it to see if anybody's trying to do the Abbey Road kind of thing, because
that's cute.
Because people do pictures of that all the time. But yeah, this is an amazing album. One of the best albums from one of the best bands ever. I just to put it out there on how big the Beatles were. They've sold over 800 million copies of their records worldwide. That's like if every single person in India bought a Beatles record.
Yeah, it's almost unfathomable, but it also makes sense all in one thought process. Thanks so much for coming in, Chris. Chris comes in to do the classic pick of the week most weeks.
Yeah.
And he does such a great job as a volunteer here for KXCI. And what are we playing off this wonderful album?
Well, we're going to play three tracks off the second side, which, like I said earlier, is several kind of short little vignettes that were kind of partly or in different sequences kind of meant to go together. And we're going to play track 14, 15, and 16, which is Golden Slumbers, Carry the Weight, and The End. Golden Slumbers and Carry the Weight were kind of meant to be played together. All three were written by McCartney, and they all grate into one another. And The End was the last song on the LP. It's kind of the Beatles' last song, if you will, titled The End. But what's kind of cool about it is it features Ringo Starr's only drum solo in the entire Beatles catalog. And it also has the guitar solo in this was shared by Harrison, Lennon, and McCartney, and they each played a few bars of it.
So here we go. Classic pick of the week, which is the Beatles' Abbey Road. Thanks so much, Chris, for coming in.
Thank you.
All right.